The water was pure and cool and raced from the hillside, as though from a natural spigot. Abie Abraham stared at it lustfully, as did the dozen or so other Americans in his group, who all stood at attention, impaled by the afternoon sun. The Japanese guard had halted the column along the east road at a spot only a few yards from the spring, but he would not permit them to take a drink. Sergeant Abraham couldn't tell at first whether the guard's decision to rest at such a tantalizing place was deliberate or absent-minded torture, but it was torture nonetheless. Clean artesian water, filtered by stone, splashing in brisk freshets from a hole in the jungle. The sight of it was unbearable. The thought of it. The thought of not having it. Abraham tried to avert his gaze, but he couldn't. His mouth was cottony, his lips were cracked, his tongue fell thickly over his teeth. For 5 cruel minutes on the afternoon of April 10, 1942, Abraham and his comrades stared. Abie Abraham was a staff sergeant in the 1st Battalion of the 31st Infantry, the same unit in which Dr. Ralph Hibbs had served. A Syrian American, Abraham had grown up in the wrinkled steel country of western Pennsylvania and had done a tour in Panama before shipping out to the Philippines in 1939. A gregarious, pug-nosed man with tattoos coursing down his arms, Abraham had been a champion army boxer before the war. He was a fast-talking plug of a fellow, scrappy, stubborn, and hard, and yet now even he was beginning to flag. Abraham had a small piece of shrapnel lodged in his back and a slow-healing bullet wound in his thigh, but his immediate problem was thirst. He hadn't had any water since morning, when his group first stumbled out of the jungle and assembled on the main road. In the stifling heat, the Japanese guards had rounded them up and inspected them. Most of the guards were kids, 17- or 18-year-old peasants, fresh from the misty rice paddies and terraced valleys of Nippon. Many of them seemed scared. Although they had the guns, they were outnumbered and surrounded by a spiteful foe. Accepting the surrender of a foreign enemy on foreign soil, they found themselves in the midst of a vast and unpredictable drama for which there was no script. For Abraham, the most obvious and impressive fact was that the Japanese were in a terrific rush to get them wherever they were headed. Bounding alongside the columns, or trundling slowly on black bicycles, the guards yelled, "Speedo! Speedo!" and seemed animated by an acute sense of deadline. Evidently, their superiors had ordered them to move X number of prisoners X number of miles by nightfall. They were preoccupied with their task and clearly overwhelmed by its enormity, as the full scale of the surrender gradually became apparent to them. More and more prisoners trickled out of the Epil-Epil thickets to surrender, some of them waving bedsheets which they had radiantly stained with mercurochrome to resemble the rising sun, in hopes of adding further inoculation value to their limp flags of truce. The growing exodus of prisoners marched all day along the East Road, 4 abreast, in long columns of approximately 100 men. But the Japanese were falling behind their deadline. Abraham could see the urgency lining their faces, could hear the mounting frustration in the way they sucked air through their clenched teeth. The Americans couldn't move fast enough. As morning burned into midday, the cumulative effects of their battle wounds and their myriad ailments and infirmities began to exhibit themselves, and the pace began to slip even further. "We staggered like drunken men," Abraham said. "Our bodies had been whittled away. Our eyes looked like burned-out sockets. We were scarecrows." The Japanese became increasingly irritated with the prisoners' halting progress. Their exhortations grew louder and more shrill. "Speedo! Speedo!" they cried. With greater frequency, they punctuated their demands with the flash of steel blades. At one point, Abraham misinterpreted a command of some kind, and in punishment for his peccadillo, received a bayonet tip through his hand.